Well, good morning. It is June 29th, 2020, and this is our morning Bible study. And today we are in 2 Samuel chapter 9. 2 Samuel chapter 9. So now would be the perfect time to go ahead and pause the audio, listen to, read the text, and then unpause the audio so you can listen to the rest of the Bible study. So go ahead and pause now, and we will be right back together. Okay, so I skipped through, if you're one of these people who have been loyally following along and in listening, you'll notice that we skipped through the material in all of chapter 8. Okay, so there are two little pericopes in chapter 8, although that's how the Net Bible divides that is into two. Do you have to call it two pericopes? Maybe not, but they do, just for sake of ease of understanding. And basically, the idea in chapter 8 is that David is having, you know, peace and prosperity at home, and he's able to project power abroad, which, by the way, is my personal definition for how any nation becomes a great nation. You know, a nation is a great nation if it has peace and prosperity at home and can project power abroad. That's my shorthand definition, you know. I'm sure that there are other historians who would differ with that, but you know, that's my position. So that's how David is. He has peace, he has prosperity, and he projects power. And he has a cabinet. He has people who are in official positions, and he's got strength. He's got security. He's got people who are loyal to him, serving in a lot of important positions, and he's able to essentially subjugate a lot of the surrounding peoples. Well, then we begin chapter 9, and chapter 9 is a fascinating chapter. This is of such immense theological significance. People have talked about Mephibosheth for a long time for a lot of good reasons. And by the way, if you have a child coming and you need a name, Mephibosheth is an outstanding name. But we've already met Mephibosheth. If you remember back when, we've already met him. The Bible was planting a seed for his story to be brought back in. And so we now pick that thread back up. Okay, so David is now secure. He's got strength, he's got power, and his mind then goes from gaining security and strength and peace and prosperity to now taking another step of saying, you know, can I show kindness to anybody in the family of Saul? Not even the family of Jonathan. He just says, is there anybody left in the family of Saul so that I may extend kindness to him for the sake of Jonathan? Now, he doesn't say anybody left of Jonathan's line. He says, is there anybody left from the entire line of Saul, so that he can show kindness to him for the sake of Jonathan? That's a significant difference. David is not simply going to show kindness to the family of Jonathan on Jonathan's behalf. He's going to show kindness to anybody in the family of Saul on Jonathan's behalf. Saul, who was his enemy. Now, if you think there's some, you know, potentially theological, Christological significance there, you're absolutely right. There is. Okay, but we must move on. Verse 2 tells us, because we're going to get a clear explication of this. Now, there was a servant from Saul's house named Ziba. So he was summoned to David. Now, so apparently they say, hey, well, you know, there was a guy who was Saul's, one of Saul's servants, and he was kind of high up in Saul's chain of command, and he's still alive and he's around. And so David calls him. And the king asked him, are you Ziba? He replied, at your service. The king said, is there not someone left from Saul's family that I may extend kindness, God's kindness, to him? And Ziba said to the king, one of Jonathan's sons is left. Both his feet are crippled. The king asked him, where is he? Ziba told the king, he is at the house of Maker, son of Amiel, in Lodebar. Okay, so it's interesting that, you know, the name of the town he is in is Lodebar. And Lodebar kind of sounds an awful lot like, you know, the Hebrew expression, don't speak, Lodebar, don't say it, don't speak. And so the king asked this guy. And remember, Saul was an enemy to David. Now, David wasn't Saul's enemy, but Saul was an enemy to David. And David has now just accumulated all of this power. And David calls up one of Saul's old servants and says, hey, is anybody even surviving from Saul's lineage? Any potential heirs to the throne that I might, you know, show God's kindness to them? And Ziba just says, yeah, one of Jonathan's kids is left. Both of his feet are crippled. Okay, why does he add that detail? Why does he add that detail? Is it a non sequitur? Is he just saying it because it's a fact? I mean, is that who Ziba is? Just one of those guys who just says stuff? Is it because he's trying to tell David that, you know, that this guy is not a threat to you. Both of his feet are crippled. He is not a threat to you. Or is he saying he's a soft target? Could be any of the three. We don't really know. We're going to find out more about Ziba later. But right now, we don't really know about Ziba. He could potentially be acting in perfectly good faith, or he could potentially be not such a good actor. But he says he's at the house of Maker, the son of Amiel, in Lodibar. So he's saying, hey, so Jonathan still has a son left, and he's crippled in both of his feet, and he lives in Don't Say, or Don't Speak. Okay, so King David had him brought from the house of Maker, the son of Amiel, in Lodibar. When Mephibosheth, son of Jonathan, the son of Saul, came to David, he bowed low with his face to the ground, and David said, Mephibosheth, basically, are you Mephibosheth? And he said, yes, at your service. Now, if you're Mephibosheth, how are you feeling right now? Are you feeling incredibly confident? Are you feeling like, hey, I just hit the big time, this is finally, you know, everything's coming up Mephibosheth today? Or are you perhaps entertaining some kind of doubts and concerns and fears that maybe this is not just the unsolicited act of kindness that David makes it seem like it is? Okay, so we're not sure yet. We need to find out. And so David said to him, by the way, look at what we have. Look at the way the story is told. The story is not told from the perspective of the omniscient narrator. The omniscient narrator would look in David's heart and would say what David's motivations were. So the question is, why isn't this story told from the position of the omniscient third-person narrator? Well, the reason is actually pretty obvious, that they don't want, whoever wrote the story didn't want us to know ahead of time. They wanted to create dramatic tension. They wanted to create tension in the narrative so that we're questioning, okay, what is David going to do? Is David going to actually show kindness on behalf of Jonathan, to whom he swore an oath? Is David going to be an oath keeper? Is David going to fulfill his promises? Or is David going to simply destroy the children of his enemy? You know, is he gonna destroy any threat to his throne? Is he gonna destroy any potential claimants to the throne because of his enmity with Saul? Now this again, you say, man, this sounds like this has real Christological significance. This reminds me of Jesus, and it should. It's supposed to. This is David. This is David at one of his most Christagogic positions. Christagogic means it leads us to Christ. It shows us Christ as the paragon. Christ is the point to which we are to look to see what humanity is supposed to be like. And so David points us to Christ here. It is Christagogic. We see who Christ is and who Christ will be. And so we don't know. Is David going to fulfill his promise? David made a covenant with Jonathan. He made a promise to Jonathan that he swore everlasting faith to the house of Jonathan. Just as God swore everlasting faithfulness to Abraham. God made everlasting promises to Abraham, and those promises included Abraham's children. So that means that if the people of Abraham, if Abraham's children, and not only Abraham's children, but specifically the children through Isaac, the children through Jacob, if the Jewish people are exterminated, God has failed to keep his promises. If God fails to someday redeem and give the land fully and completely and forever to the children of Israel, then God has failed to keep his promises. Now, you could say, well, God has every reason to reject the people of Israel because the people of Israel have 10 times over, 100 times over, they have betrayed him and rebelled against him. They've gone into idolatry. They've gone into other forms of sin. They've rejected Messiah. I mean, Peter says this. Peter, in his great Pentecost sermon, he says, you rejected Messiah. You know, and Stephen says this. Stephen says, you killed the author of life. And so we would say, yeah, is God perfectly justified in exterminating and wiping out the people of Israel because of all their covenant breaking? Yeah, he is. Except he's not, because he made a promise. The question is God going to keep his promises, or is God going to exact personal justice? What kind of God do we have? Do we have a God who fulfills promises to the children of his enemies, or does he exact personal justice, personal vengeance? Well, David says to Mephibosheth, verse 7, he says, don't be afraid, because I will certainly extend kindness to you for the sake of Jonathan, your father. You will be a regular guest at my table. Then Mephibosheth bowed and said, of what importance am I, your servant, that you show regard for a dead dog like me? Mephibosheth says, why? Why are you showing kindness to me? I mean, there's really no reason. There's no reason why, from Mephibosheth's perspective, that David should show kindness. Mephibosheth is nothing but potential trouble. He is nothing but a deficit. He is not an asset in any way. He is nothing but a deficit to David. He is a constant threat to his throne. He's crippled. He's not going to go fight in battle for him. He's lived in isolation. He doesn't know the court. Mephibosheth is not going to be a wonderful courtier. Mephibosheth brings nothing but needs to David. Nothing but needs. So why? Why should David show kindness to him? Mephibosheth brings nothing but needs and threats. Why? Why should David show kindness? Well, David gives the answer. He says, because for the sake of Jonathan, for the sake of your father. And then the king summoned Ziba, Saul's attendant, and said to him, "Everything that belonged to Saul, to his entire house, I hereby give to your master's grandson." Bam, right there. Mephibosheth went from being a poor cripple, living in the hospitality of somebody else in the town of Don't Speak, and he is now given all of the property that belonged to Saul and his entire house. The entire dynastic wealth of Saul is now given to Mephibosheth. And then he tells Ziba, he says, "You will cultivate the land for him, you and your sons and your servants. You will bring its produce, and it will be food for your master's grandson to eat. But Mephibosheth, your master's grandson, will be a regular guest at my table." Now Ziba had 15 sons and 20 servants. Okay, so this Ziba, who was a important servant of Saul, he's not a nobody, by the way. And it seems like Ziba has kind of taken over the property of Saul, that he's been kind of the caretaker. He's been a steward, but has he been a very good steward? Hard to say. We don't really know yet. We don't know who Ziba is. Maybe he's been totally appropriate. Maybe he's done everything on the up and up, but we don't know. All we know is that Ziba, who was Saul's servant, is giving very detailed information to David, and he's also got 15 sons and 20 servants, and he's a servant himself. Okay, so he's the servant to a dead lord, mind you. And so we've got these questions about Ziba. Is Ziba somebody who's entirely trustworthy? We're not really sure. And so Ziba says to the king, he says, "Your servant will do everything that my lord the king has instructed his servant to do." So Mephibosheth was a regular guest at David's table, just as though he were one of the king's sons. And so does Mephibosheth have to go out and work the land? Does Mephibosheth have to go out and work the soil? Does he have to go out and drive the oxen and harrow the soil and plant the seed? Does he have to go cultivate the ground? Does he have to go hoe some rows? What does Mephibosheth have to do any of that? No, he is a regular guest at David's table. David, every single day, is having Mephibosheth eat with him. He's got a place in the royal city. He's got a place in the royal palace. He's got a place at the royal table. Mephibosheth has a place with the king. And why does Mephibosheth have a place with the king? Because David is showing faithfulness to Jonathan, his friend. He's showing faithfulness, and he's fulfilling a promise that he has made in the past. David is doing what he is doing for Mephibosheth, a person who can bring him no benefit. Mephibosheth has nothing to offer David. Like I said, he can't fight in the army for him. He's not a wise counselor, as far as we know. He hasn't been around the court, so he can't help David navigate the court. He offers nothing but deficits to David. He offers no benefits. He has no credentials. And yet, David shows this unspeakable kindness to him. Why? For the sake of his promise to Jonathan. Now, we continue. You know, so Ziba says to the king, "Your servant will do everything that my lord the king has instructed his servant to do." And so Ziba just says straightforward, "Yeah, I'll do whatever you say." And so Mephibosheth was a regular guest at David's table, just as though he were one of the king's sons. Okay, so that's a significant statement. That's a significant statement. Because what he's saying is David essentially adopts Mephibosheth. He treats him just like he would treat one of the sons. What's he doing? He's saying that Jonathan, my brother, Jonathan, that David and Jonathan, they loved each other as they loved themselves. Remember that part? That part of the Bible, that they loved each other as they loved themselves? And why? Because they were full of the love of God. People who really love God love each other. They love others as they love themselves. David and Jonathan were the best of friends. And the scripture is plain. Jonathan loved David as he loved himself. And I believe that David loved him in that reciprocal way. Because, you know, when they wept, it says when they wept when they were separated, it says David wept the most. And I know that in our perverse and disgusting culture, people want to turn this into something homosexual. But it's nothing of the sort. These two men found a friendship, a deep and abiding friendship that came from desiring to love and serve Yahweh and to love and serve the people of Israel. They found kindred spirits within one another, and they loved each other. And that's a beautiful thing. There's nothing untoward or perverse or gross about this. They were just two men who built a deep and lasting friendship, or at least it lasted as long as they lived. I mean the kind of friendship and self-sacrifice that Jonathan offered is something that could teach anybody a lesson about friendship. And what David does afterwards is he fulfills his promise that he made to his friend. David is fulfilling the promises that he made to Jonathan, that he was going to look after his family. He was going to extend kindness to the house of Saul. David is doing what he said he was going to do. David is showing kindness to those who don't deserve it because of a promise that he made before. Now, who does that sound like? Who does that sound like? Of course, we know who that sounds like. That sounds like Jesus. That sounds exactly like Jesus. We are all Mephibosheth. We are all crippled debtors to God. We are all crippled debtors who could be seen as nothing but potential enemies. And yet God shows kindness to us. God shows us overabundant kindness. God says that we shall inherit everything. We shall inherit everything, and that we will sit ourselves at the king's table and be treated as one of the king's own sons. Does that not sound exactly like the relationship that we have with God the Father through Christ? Of course it does. Of course it does. It's because David, his relationship with Mephibosheth, points us to the relationship that Christians can have with God the Father through Jesus Christ. Anyways, I hope this was a meaningful Bible study to you. I hope you enjoyed it, and I hope you'll join us tomorrow for our Tuesday morning Bible study. Thank you. God bless.